A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Just download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Skill Alexander, Kelly Bidlin in the house as well. We welcome Drew Dinsick to the show, kind enough to join us this morning for a couple segments. You can find him on Twitter at @whale_capper. Whale Capper himself, plus the podcast which he co-hosts, Deep Dive with Drew Dinsick and Andy Molitor, and then NBC Sports Bet the Edge. Drew joins us now from his lair in Long Beach. How you doing, man?
Yeah, much like Wimbledon, a little bit of a slow start. It's that'll happen though, July 5th. But I hope you guys had a wonderful holiday, and
you too.
Yeah, you got a chance to spend some time outside, and it was a lot of fun yesterday. And I would trade a lot to get this tournament really going in sincerity here.
Brutal.
We're still waiting for round one to wrap up, which makes it tough to really draw any conclusions from what we've seen so far. But, hopefully the rest of the day weather agrees and we can, wrap up some of this tennis.
I just went through what has been completed for me on my picks, what is in play for me, and what is yet to come. Do you have that same sort of thing happening with you?
Oh, yeah. A ton of liquidity has been locked up for days now. We're on to day three of this Fritz match, which I took a pretty decent live swing on Fritz there. Hopeful that he can come through.
I'm Hanfin preflop, so I'm against you.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
You'll forgive
that.
Me if I want you to lose that one.
No, it should be a good finish though. I'm mostly just tracking order of play, trying to find out when and where that match will be so I can watch it.
What is your best guess? Cause I have not figured that out.
Sometime in the next 2 hours, I think.
Okay. All right. That works.
I really don't know.
Yeah, no one knows.
But the overall though, I've seen some decent quality of play. I just wish that there would be a little bit more consistency in terms of roof open closed and not exactly understanding some of these decisions that they're making. But so be it.
Also, one of the things, and by the way, we'll get to what you still have penny. Well, why don't we do that first, and then I want a broader question about it. What do you have that hasn't started yet?
I have Cressy minus
too.
1.5 sets of plus money.
Okay.
I think he takes care of business in short order over Laszlo Giri.
Mm-hmm. We are aligned.
I took the games with Liam Brody against Casper Ruud. I got 5.5 games of plus money. I think that's going to be a pretty competitive second round match there. Out of what has not started, those are the two.
Okay.
Everything else is just in the balance.
I do have Cressy money line on that match. I think that price is way higher than it was maybe when I got it. There's one of these matches that got away. Maybe that's the one that's much higher price. Let me check if that's Cressy because I got it.
Cressy minus 150.
Oh,
right
yeah.
Now?
I was minus 136. Nice. Yeah. So I don't know. It's getting too high to play at this point, but if you haven't yet, but hopefully you played it when I sent it out yesterday. So, here was my other question about all these stops and starts. So when we got into the two matches at a time situation yesterday, which was most of the day yesterday, just center court and court number one that are covered in the rain, the decision that they make, and you understand why they make this decision, is usually the bigger name players get out there, right? So, here's Anshabur, here's Sabalenka, I'm trying to think what the male equivalent was yesterday. But anyway, then there's this old, isn't there also a built-in advantage even further for those bigger players, right? Because they'll have extra rest heading into whomever they play in round number two. So that's also a consequence of this.
100%, yeah. And that's always been one of the things you have to kind of keep in mind about Wimbledon and outrights. It's not preferential. Like, if people paid a ticket, they want to see Annie Murray.
Yeah. Right. Annie Murray.
People
was the
paid.
One.
Mm-hmm. They paid a ticket. They want to see Iga. They want to see Ons. They want to see Sabalenka. They want to see the name players. And so the idea of getting those matches on kind of a normal schedule and everybody into their routines is just sort of a factor. I've definitely been in Wimbledon's past where Roger Federer had perfectly every other day he was playing on center court in perfect conditions. And, he was into like round four and they were still like wrapping up round two matches.
I do remember that. Yes.
that sort of sequencing, you know, definitely is a unique thing that you only really see at Wimbledon, because none of the other majors really, you know, have to deal, you know, too significantly with rain. But it feels like Wimbledon, this is kind of, you know, this is the norm.
Okay. Let's, by the way, was there any other, before we move on from tennis, was there any other, I mean, it's hard to make any conclusions so far. Do you have any macro statements?
Well, I mean, we kind of, I think we undersold how soft Iga's draw is.
Yes, I think we did.
And, you know, it was clear on paper, but it's, you know, having seen the way that, you know, basically chalk is prevailing on the women's side so far. It's been everyone that you had questions about, maybe other than Coco Gauff is maybe the only exception. She's ousted, but, you know, maybe had some issues or questions with Sabalenka's run-up. She was superlative. Rybakina, even though she lost that first set, ultimately cruise control winner after she kind of got her serve under control in that very first service game. Although, you know, Rybakina does look really slight. You know, pretty clearly something happened. Mm-hmm. You know, physically, she's maybe not, you know, as fit as she would be normally for this type of a tournament. So there's, you know, if she has like a real test at some point in week one, it'll be interesting to see how she bounces back physically. And you know, everybody else that has looked pretty good is on the opposite side of the draw or out of Iga's quarter. You know, the Sofia Kenin Coco Gauff match was the best match of the tournament.
Yes,
so far.
It was.
Kenin comes through. That was pretty amazing tennis by her. You know, reminds you of years and years ago where she was challenging, you know, at the French Open and, you know, winning, you know, coming off of winning the Australian Open. Didn't know she still had that in her arsenal, but she does. And Coco is out, which makes Iga's, you know, quarter of the draw even softer. Yeah. So yeah, this is going to go, you know, pretty clearly, I think, in her favor over the first, you know, four or five rounds here. And I would expect that, you know, she draws an opponent who comes out of the bottom half, who's, you know, a little bit battle weary, right? You know, it's going to take a lot of your juice to get out of that bottom half. There's just a very, very, thick, section of, you know, high quality, that is not going anywhere. So, yeah, I think realistically, this is as good an opportunity as Iga is going to have to win this tournament. And it does feel like she's playing with a little bit less, pressure. Last year felt pressure filled every single time she was out there. And
well,
this
and
year
I
didn't
I,
feel that way.
Yeah. I would even say the French has become so like, oh, well, she's supposed to win the French. She's supposed to win the French and she is supposed to win the French, but there's so much pressure involved in, you know, being the presumptive favorite that once she won that, I said it here on air too. I'm like, oh man, she can just play Wimbledon like, you know, loose now, right? This is all gravy at this point. If she can win Wimbledon, now she's on the Serena pace at this point, right? In terms of age 22. So we'll see. But yes, I would agree with all of that in terms of if this would be her fifth major. Serena won six, I think, right about this time, similar age. So let's transition to the NBA and we'll keep this over the break. Is there anything that has happened thus far, or maybe reading the tea leaves of Dame Lillard moving forward, that has induced any kind of bet for you, or at least has planted a seed in your head like, okay, if this happens, I'll look to do this?
I haven't made any bets in the NBA, but the Lillard storyline is going to drive a ton of market reaction, obviously. The Celtics right now would be the team for me to beat, you know, team to beat in the Eastern Conference, I think by margin as currently rostered. I'm not ruling out at all the chances that the Celtics are sort of late actors in a Dame Lillard, you know, trade situation scenario. They can offer the best package, and I think it would probably behoove them to, you know, to get what they can in terms of fair value for Jaylen Brown. And I think Lillard would be an upgrade specifically in terms of, you know, playoff basketball, end of game situational advantages. Lillard really, really helps you take a step forward relative to Jaylen Brown. So ears open for that actually, you know, emerging or realizing in any way. And if it does, then I think the Celtics are a pretty straightforward bet to win the East. If it doesn't, if he goes to the Heat and the market, you know, gives you, you know, any kind of higher price on the Celtics than you currently see, I think then they're the play, you know, so I would shop for something like 3-1 if the Heat flip them in odds, if after, you know, post Lillard trade. But you know, it's pretty soft lean and not really, you know, trying to lock up a ton of liquidity at this point, mostly willing to kind of let this play out. I think ultimately the NBA is in a weird transitioning time right now. None of the, you know, superstars really move the needle the way they used to. And I think a lot of the young up and coming teams are going to have something to say about the playoff picture this year. So it's there's going to be a lot of turnover, I think, from the top to the bottom, a lot of churn. In the NBA over the balance of the season.
Let me just clarify. If he goes to the Celtics, you love the Celtics. You already like the Celtics. Yeah. If he goes to the Heat, you're not feeling the same way quite about the Heat?
No, that would be a buy sign on me, you know, for the Celtics.
For the Celtics.
Based on price.
Based on price. Right, because they would get longer. Okay.
Yeah, I think that would be my read.
All right, Drew Dinsick, one more segment on the other side. We'll talk, see if he's made any more football bets. He also just absolutely entertained us with Tour de France thoughts last time. Maybe if you want to bet some Tour this summer, he's got some names that he'll repronounce for us next. That's on the other side. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. Gil Alexander, Kelly Midland, producer number nine in the house. So much more than a producer. How you doing, Kelly? You good?
Yeah, good.
Did I say proudly brought to you by BetMGM? I don't even remember what I said just
now. I don't know.
Okay.
I think we've got another drill incident going on behind me right now.
Oh, do we? What do you mean?
You're not hearing that?
Oh, no, I'm not hearing it. Was a fire drill thing?
Yeah, keep going.
Oh, never mind. Okay. I'll hear it. I'm sure the audience
might have to shut down some construction work again. You know,
a little jackhammering going on back there. Kelly Bidlin, show bouncer. We'll see if he has it. We'll see if there's an incident this segment. Let's talk some football. Let's bring in our own Mike Pritchard, who's kind enough to hang out with us each and every Wednesday on the show. He played the game, first round draft pick, national champion, and VSiN host. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Great to see you.
All right.
I have a few questions. First of which is, so last week we talked all football on the network because the betting guide came out on Thursday. I hope everybody gets that at VSiN.com/subscribe, out super early so people could sort of digest it. Everybody was given picks on there. My question for you that I asked of someone else last week was there something that, you know, having been, you know, sort of nudged into diving into football perhaps earlier and heavier than you're normal, you're normally used to at this stage of the summer. Was there something last week that crystallized in your brain, either to the good or to the bad, about a team that you hadn't really thought about before, where you're like, oh, I didn't see this. Maybe this is something that I didn't anticipate.
You know what? I'm taking a second, a third, and perhaps a fourth look at the Denver Broncos, to be honest with you. Gil, you know, if everything about that organization or about that team, who has not been to the playoffs since what, 2015, right? The Peyton Manning era. You know, I think if everything about that team centers around their quarterback, and the fact of Russell Wilson just simply becoming what Russell Wilson was when he first got to the league, I mean, that seems like it's doable, right? I mean, he's very, very talented. We know that. It's just the ego and the persona that he wants to present. You know, the whole let's ride thing. I mean, how plastic was that last year? I mean, and everybody could see through it, right?
Yeah.
If he just humbles himself and becomes a football player and becomes all about the team and not try to elevate himself out the locker room like he did in Seattle, like he continued to do once he first got to Denver. And I think Sean Payton might be the type of coach, the authoritative coach, the assertive head coach that team needs right now. So I've been taking a third and a fourth look at that football team just to see. I know they went out in free agency. They were very aggressive. They basically bought themselves a football team. If it all comes together and this quarterback can play better, I think the Broncos can surprise people this year.
Okay, I don't want to gloss over that awkward and cringy thing about Russell Wilson, because we've talked about it on this show many times. I'm sure others have as well, where when they do mic up Russell Wilson, right, it is like it is cringy. I don't use that word about anyone else in pro sports and that I can even think of. And so you played the game. Like, have you played with guys like that where you feel like the, I don't know if it, in the case of Russell Wilson, it's this inauthenticity that sort of seems to ring out in terms of him trying to be the leader. Like, it's one thing, we were in Seattle all those years. You just arrived in Denver, and it just came off weird. Have you ever, did you ever play with someone like that where you don't have to give names, but where you're sort of like, oh, and it just doesn't work?
You know what, Gil, nobody comes to mind. And here's the reason. I think in my day, you were exposed early. Like, you know, in today's football, I think you can hide behind social media. You know, you can hide behind a lot of other aspects, your brand, right, and all that kind of thing. You know, back then, we had the quarterback club, and you know, quarterbacks separated themselves. But for the most part, as players, we were united because we were trying to do what's best for the league and do what's best for the union. And that was free agency and, you know, band together. So nobody came across that way as fake. You go back to Ricky Waters when he said for who, for what, and that thing, I tell you what, that was crazy, right? If you think about it, I'm not going to go over the middle. I'm not going to sacrifice this, you know, all the things that came with that. And that got blown up, right? But, you know, he was being real, but yet he's a borderline Hall of Fame type of player too. So I think for Russell, and here's where it gets correlative for me, is I was looking at the Comeback Player of the Year award odds, and he's at 25-1. I mean, you can shop around a little bit. Damar Hamlin is the leader in the clubhouse, if you will, but yet I look at the depth chart of Buffalo, and I'm like, how is he going to get on the field and really contribute at a high enough level to win Comeback Player of the Year? Maybe if he just steps on the field, that's Comeback Player of the Year.
I think considering he might be.
Considering what he went through, right? But if you look at the odds here, you know, 20-1, and you shop around a little bit, but if Hamlin's not playing a lot, you know, and so, certainly Russell Wilson and the Broncos are surprising, there's a narrative, right? And so that one's intriguing to me. Looking at this market right there for you know, that correlative betting, when you look at the Broncos and surprise, and certainly Russell Wilson rebounding as well.
I do think that's worth bringing. I famously was screaming with Kelly, you know, a couple months ago. Did they almost die on the field? Meaning that Damar Hamlin's got to be the Comeback Player of the Year if he even plays a snap, right?
Right.
But maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Like if he isn't a contributor of any kind, maybe there is a narrative for someone else, and Russell Wilson would certainly be on that short list. And it is a way, we just talked about this a couple segments ago with Drew, about you can bet some of these other markets by proxy. And we were referring to Mike Tomlin. If Pittsburgh won that division, that Mike Tomlin at 25-1 might be the more sensible bet than a Pittsburgh plus 450 to win the division. You're sort of indicating another way to perhaps bet the Denver Broncos' success this year with a Russell Wilson Comeback Player of the Year. Let me go back to Coach of the Year for a second that we had with Drew. Is there a coach that stands out to you? Again, narrative, right? Looking for a path where this particular person, this particular head coach, might be able to snag the award. Dan Campbell and Sean Payton are the only ones in single digits right now. Is there someone else that you have your eye on?
You know, Matt LaFleur is interesting because of Jordan Love, you know, that whole thing. You know, you kind of separate yourself from Aaron Rodgers, and if you're highly successful, say Green Bay does win a division, right? Okay, there's your coach of the year, I would think, because you're doing it without that great quarterback. You're doing it without, you know, back-to-back Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and so truly your coaching acumen would be right there. You know, that's where I would look. And, you know, certainly I mentioned Sean Payton already, and, you know, in the Broncos, and the Broncos have not been to the playoffs since 2015, like I mentioned. But Dan Campbell, look, the Lions have not been to the playoffs since, what, 2010? Something like that. So, you know, I see why he's a favorite. That's not a bad price, too, to be honest with you, plus 850. But, no, LaFleur is the one question mark, the big question mark that I have with all the coaches right now this year.
I think that's as good an answer as any, though, right? Because if Jordan Love does, and I've said this, and this goes back to your day playing, and I always talk about this, forgive me for repeating this to folks, but it's back in the day, backup quarterbacks held the clipboard. And oftentimes when they did that for years under the same coaching staff, they ended up being surprisingly great when they finally got on the field, because they had all those years to, you know, be under one system. The tutelage of that really was driven home. And again, with Washington, a team that you were familiar playing back in your day, Mark Rippon, Stan Humphries, Trent Green, all of them examples of guys who sat there for years and then when they got their chance were really good quarterbacks in the NFL and got their teams, you know, in Ripon's case, as far as the whole, you know, the whole title. Humphreys to a Super Bowl, Trent Green, had he not got hurt, who knows? So there is that with Jordan Love. Like, I think the assumption that he's going to stink is not a good assumption to have. And if he is successful and the Packers do anything, Matt LaFleur will be the guy that gets so much of that credit. I think it makes a ton of sense. 16-1 right now, Coach of the Year, DraftKings. Yeah. Here's the other way I want to ask this about, and it doesn't have to be about last week and thinking more about football, but just in general, when we look at teams this year, you know, you have some teams in mind where you're like, I think this team might be better than the market. I think this team might be a little worse. These teams are obviously good. These teams are obviously bad. What's the team that has the widest range of outcomes, in your opinion? Ooh. So we,
yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, because, you know, every team, things break their way, they break against them. But what's the team where you can see, man, this could be spectacularly good, this could be spectacularly bad?
Yeah, the NFC North comes to mind. Because there's always a couple of surprises, right? I mean, think back to last year. There was a couple of surprises, the Giants in Seattle, for the most part. And then as a bettor, you know, you kind of look at your power rankings, or you look at all these favorites, you look at all these great teams, and those are the teams in the playoffs. I think this year in the NFC, the Saints could go to the Super Bowl. You know, if that defense plays like they've been playing and comes together and plays better, and then all of a sudden Derek Carr exceeds his ceiling and breaks through his ceiling and gets to another level. They could win the division, one. And then you think about that dome, you think about home field advantage a little bit if they have a great year. And then all of a sudden, you know, in the NFC, you're looking at a team that really, from an odds standpoint, would be a big surprise if they got hot that way. And I think Atlanta is the same way, too. But for the most part, I think it's a four-team race in the NFC. But to answer your question specifically, I think the Saints could be that team.
As good an answer as any, you know, because really, so many bullish on Derek Carr, and then there's so many of us that have observed Derek Carr, obviously intimately here in Las Vegas, beyond that, and are just right. Like, all the talent in the world, but seems to make all the wrong decisions in the key moments of games. So I'm like, I'm not a buyer, but I can see that just based on your answer.
And out of excuses, too, because, you know, he's always wanted a defense, right? Now he's got one.
Now he's got one. Out of excuses. Mike, always a pleasure. Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you guys. Have a great day.
Mike Pritchard, everybody, at M.I. Pritchard on the old Twitter machine. Still to come, Will Hill to join us with all his baseball and basketball thoughts, including how he's going to play his Shohei MVP bet or how he already perhaps has played it. Jason Weingarten from Under a Cloud of Smoke and a Wimbledon update. Next, Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com to check the current betting splits data.
Mike Tomlin, underrated.
Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 10 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets, where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits, yet another way. Too many to count. We don't have enough time. That VSiN is here to make you smarter, better year-round. Check them out. All of today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. Skill Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Tatiana Maria does lose, so that drops our Wimbledon record to 4-2 on the Young Tournament. 4-2.
You suck.
What's that?
You suck.
And Lloyd Harris has just forced, or not forced, but he has just evened things up with Grégoire Barrère after he gacked the first set, which brings us to tweets. We get tweets at Beating the Book. This is from, where did that one go? This is from Touchdown Jesus. He says, I never fully understood your chosen verb, gack, for bad tennis losses until I watched that Harris first set today and actually made that sound out loud.
Your body involuntarily made that sound?
Gack!
Yeah.
Chris Patrick, Florida sports betting, is it back? What do you know about that, Kelly? You're a Floridian?
Yeah, not much. Apparently, I pulled up this article, though, a couple breaks ago. It doesn't help out much. It's a lot of legalese, you know, where I'm like, I don't know what you're saying. Just speak English to me.
Kelly Bidlin.
Lawyers and doctors.
Not a licensed attorney.
Yeah. It looks like something changed with the Seminole tribe down there and how things are working out. So it sounds like it will be returning. And where the Seminole tribe does have stuff set up, could be back up and running pretty quickly. So that whole Hard Rock situation.
You hear that, Calvin Ridley?
Yeah, with one wide receiver might be back open for business real quick.
Calvin Ridley would be like, I'm good. Never betting there again.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah. This is the injury report. It was everybody, groin, this person, hamstring, Ridley, parlay.
Gambling suspension. Yeah, parlay.
Okay, so by the way, in terms of just the match, the highlight of the morning at Wimbledon, if there is one, and I think there is one, Maria Sakkari, she bageled Marta Kostyuk in the first set, 6-love, and then Kostyuk, the Ukrainian, comes way back. We were not involved in this match, by the way. But she comes back 7-5, 6-2 to win it. The eighth seed on the ladies' side goes by the wayside. And Iga, double parked outside. She rolls in the first set anyway against Sarah Cerebus-Tormo. Iga got a really favorable draw. So I hope everybody tailed on the Q1 bet and hopefully on the outright as well. Even though we didn't bet it 7 or 8 times like we normally do. We have Iga on the outright. We have Iga with Djokovic. Come on, Iga. Do your thing. Try to get her fifth major and her first on grass.
Did you end up on anything on the men's side? Did you just say Djokovic? Would you do a parlay?
I have the Djokovic Iga parlays, but other than that, I have no outrights. Okay. No. Which was the same thing we did in the French, right? We had the Alcaraz Iga ones, but we didn't have Alcaraz outright either. Which did not get there. So, okay. You said, so the interesting thing with Pritch that we just went through, by the way, because you and I were talking about this off air, is the question at the end about which teams have the most, sort of wide range of outcomes as the construction work continues here at the South Point Hotel. And he faked us out because he went NFC. He's like, well, the whole NFC North. And I could see your face. You were like, oh, I totally agree with this. And then he went to the Saints. Obviously, not an NFC North team, but an NFC South team. That didn't resonate with you as much as NFC North?
Yeah, I think the NFC South, I understand why the Saints are favorite. I'm not confident in any of those teams. So, like you said about Derek Carr, I don't know that I'm ridiculously confident that the Saints are going to win that division, nor am I as confident as some others out there in both this Panthers and Falcons team, which I feel like we keep hearing more and more about.
People love the Falcons.
Yeah.
They love the Falcons.
I don't know about you. I don't think that's a division I'm doing anything with before the season
starts. Not a damn thing.
I think there are some divisions that are pretty dang wide open this year. I mean, Drew talked about it earlier, AFC North. I think you got four really good teams.
Were you buying what he was selling? Jesse Welch, by the way, chimes in on that on Twitter. He said, I've listened to Drew give an emboldened speech a few times before, and it's led me to cashing long odds tickets. I'll be along for the ride, he says, with the Steelers.
I think you could make a similar argument to the Packers in the NFC North, too, where the question is, is there that big of a separation between what the odds makers have is the top teams in those divisions and the bottom teams in those divisions. So I understand his point of being able to get over, well, you're getting 4.5 to 1 on a Steelers team that you think is pretty good. Okay, if you think they're going to have a winning record, what's really the difference there then between the winning record and going on and winning the division? You're talking about it, it's a thin margin we're talking about, yeah. Right? So I think that's the case in the AFC North. I won't be making that Steelers bet, but I can understand why you would.
I'm right there with you. I would not make the bet, but yes.
And NFC North, same thing. I'm not high on the Packers, but I've heard a couple people throw out there of like, hey, you're catching plus 475 on the Packers to win that division. Are they really that much worse than the Lions, Vikings?
I don't hate that Packers bet at all.
Yeah.
Haven't made it, full disclosure, but I don't hate that one. And for the reasons I stated about Jordan Love, like the assumption that he's not going to be good, I think is a poor one to make.
Me too.
You have consistently, like there's a lot of Kellyisms through the years. One, he's never met a Heat or Hawks bet he didn't like in basketball. That's the first thing. And then somehow when the Heat were going to the Eastern Conference Championship this year, he sort of abandoned ship. That was another story. But the other one was you always have a Vikings bet each and every summer. You don't have one this year?
I haven't made one yet. I don't know that I'm waiting for some of the other markets to open. I did see Circa release their alt win totals yesterday.
Yes,
so,
that's big. Very big.
Gonna have to dig into that a bit.
May have to make a trip to the old Tuscany to make an underbet there.
There you go, yeah. I think I'll be involved with them this year in some fashion, but I don't know if I'm gonna bet to win the division. It was over 3-1 like a month ago. 2 months ago. At that time, I would have made it at plus 250.
What is the chief reason that you have soured on the Vikings? I'll give you two choices. Is it that their defense was just so horrific at the end of last season that there's no, until you see a better defense, you can't possibly put a dollar behind them? Or is it this whole thing like they won so many close games? And this I sort of caution against, right? Because since they won so many close games, everybody's like, oh, that is going to absolutely shift the opposite. And yes, regression ought to be expected, but there is no guarantee that it just goes the entire different direction.
Sure, and there's also a major difference between the NFL and Major League Baseball. 100%. Right? You're playing 17 games. You could run pure for a while.
Yes, I mean, you know. Absolutely.
So, I think it's a little bit of both of what you just said. Yes, like that defense is pretty putrid. They didn't really get a whole lot better. I have concerns there. And yes, do I expect some of those one score games to go the other way? Yeah, you just lost one of the better running backs in the league. He's not going to be back with the team this year. I don't think it will be a huge hit to them with still having Alex Mattison in that backfield, but it's not going to help, obviously. I don't know that I'm fully on board with the Lions plus 130 in that division. It's just that division I think is very up for grabs.
And I would agree.
And I like all these people, like the one team I feel like I hear nobody talking about is the Chicago Bears, which I'm not excited about either. But if you're one of those people that were all excited about Fields and how that team kind of finished the season last year, why would you not be excited about them this year?
Yeah, they are the one team that I'm not looking at in that.
I'm not looking at it at all, yeah. But like nobody's talking about them.
Yeah, I don't. It is getting to the point, though, with the NFL where, you know, obviously Pete Rozelle's dream of parity every year is one thing. And yes, some years, again, any given Sunday, anything can happen. But in the end, it does feel a little haves and have-notty this year, more than it has in the last few years. Maybe I'm being prisoner at the moment, but I don't think anybody doubts the Chiefs and the Bengals, right, are up there. The Niners, if Brock Purdy is any semblance of what he was down the stretch last year, might be up there in the NFC, although some people might argue with that.
I think the AFC North's more up for grabs than that, but it's not because of the Bengals being bad or anything. I think the Ravens could be really good this year.
That to me feels like the team that people are forgetting about.
Yes.
Like there seems to be a unspoken Lamar Jackson backlash of, you know, maybe because of contract dispute last year and sitting out games where some people doubted the motivation of missing out on a whole bunch of those games. I don't know how legit that doubting was. But they to me, feel like they're well-coached, right? As Chrissy likes to say, Chris Andrews, John Harbaugh's, if Bill Belichick's the best coach of the NFL, John Harbaugh's the second best. Like, mm-hmm. he says that often. So I just feel like they perennially get sort of forgotten. And maybe that's a team we're all sleeping on.
Yeah, I think so. I'll probably have bets on them. But maybe not to win the division, but again, maybe over win totals, something like that.
Yes, to make the playoffs.
Yes, to make the playoffs, yep. For sure. I'll tell you, the one bet that I've made, I would still make, Jags to win the AFC South, lay the juice. What are we talking about here? I know there's been a couple people that have been randomly high on the Titans. I don't really get that. I think that AFC South could be an absolute disaster outside of
We'll
the
have
Jaguars.
All summer to talk about it. Are you a preseason bettor, by the way? Do you bet preseason?
No, not really.
Yeah, I don't either. Not really my thing. But those that do, swear by it. Some people have success. If you know the length of time the starters are going to be in, and specifically the quarterbacks, that's the information you need more than anything else in the preseason, but we're a ways away from that as well. Coming back, Will Hill, his baseball plays of the day, his basketball thoughts, how he's dealing with Shohei next.